Just as a chazorah, first of all, on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, we have a sugya of Amar Rava, which is towards the beginning of the wide lines, and that'll be relevant to sugya today. And that is, what happens if there's gold that has been woven into the talis? And our Mishnah says Shnayim Oksim V'Talis Yachloku, they each get half. But what happens in the case where there's gold in the middle? So Rava says that Yachloku, we still apply the principle of Yachloku. But the Gemara says that there's a chiddush in Rava. Why? Because each one is holding on to half the talis. However, Makarev L'Gavichad, the gold is a little bit closer to one of them. Let's say Reuven. So we might think that Reuven has a right to say, let's divide up the talis in a way, let's say to the width instead of to the length, in the way that I'll get the gold part. Kamashmalon, no, they are each considered to be muhsak on the entire talis, and therefore they split even the gold part, despite the fact that it's close to another one. Then we had the case on the same Daf Zayin Amud Aleph in the bottom of Shnayim Adukim B'Shtar. So here's a case where they're holding on to the shtar. In other words, the Malva claims that he dropped the shtar, the Lova claims that he dropped the shtar, and we don't know what to do with the shtar. So we have here on the bottom of Daf Zayin Amud Aleph the Shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel, and he applies the law of Yachloku as it applies in the Mishnah. We're just reviewing a little bit what we did the other day, so please join us.
Thank you.
And Yachloku should apply even in the case of a shtar. So who lost the shtar? The Malva claims that he dropped the shtar, and the Lova grabbed onto it. The Lova claims he dropped the shtar, he already paid up the Malva. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says Yachloku, we're going to apply the old good old Yachloku principle, which would mean that the Lova is going to have to pay half the chov. That's the shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now, what we haven't discussed yet is, with regard to talis, we understand that they're both equally holding on to the talis. We have hadukim b'talis, where each one is going to get where he's holding on to, or we have b'karkashta, where they're holding on to the ends of the talis, and then we'll split the talis in half. What about the case of a shtar? Are they both, the Malva and the Lova, holding on to the ends of the shtar equally, or is there one part of the shtar that's in the hands of the Malva and the other part is in the hands of the Lova? And the reason for this discussion that I'm raising today is because what's called Toref and Tofes. That's what's coming around the bend here on Daf Zayin Amud Beis. You have the first part of the shtar, which is called the top of the shtar, otherwise known as the Toref HaShtar. And that has the date in it. We'll see why that's important. And then you have the Tofes HaShtar, which is a sort of a review of what's in the Toref, but it has the signatures on the bottom of the Shtar. So the advantage of the Toref is that it has the Zman of the Shtar. And that has to do with what's called Gvir Mimashabde, that you can collect from Shibud. The advantage, on the other hand, of the Tofes HaShtar, which is the bottom half of the Shtar, is that it has the chasimah sa'edin. So if, let's say, for example, Reuven is holding on to the Toref HaShtar, the top part of the shtar, and Shimon to the bottom part of the shtar, the Tofes HaShtar, then if we're going to apply the principle Shnayim Adukim B'Shtar to the shtar, and in the case of Shnayim Adukim B'Talis, we've already decided Zeh Notel Atshiyod HaMagas, Zeh Notel Atshiyod HaMagas, then we're going to end up with splitting the shtar in a way that Reuven gets the Toref and Shimon gets the Tofes. That's going to be the discussion for today. So where's the case of Shnayim Adukim B'Talis? So let's go back to Daf Zayin Amud Aleph again. This is just a review of what we've done so that we'll be up to date. It's Tani Rav Tachlifa Bar Marova, and this is towards the top of Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. I'd say about, shall we say, 10 lines down, is Shnayim Adukim B'Talis, Zeh Notel Ad Shiyodo Ad Mokom Shiyodo Magas, Vezeh Notel Ad Shiyodo Ad Mokom Shiyodo Magas. And it all depends on the tfiso and the chazoka of each one of Reuven and Shimon. Now, if there's part of the talis that no one's holding on to, it's between Reuven's part and Shimon's part, then hashar cholkim b'shava, that we divide b'shava. And the Gemara goes on to analyze here whether or not each one takes a shvuah ad makom shiyada magas. Masisin the ketani palgi badadi. It's very strange because the Mishnah says that they divide up the talis, but each one has to take a shvuah on what he has. But here in the Brice it says zenotil yachiyado magas, zenotil yachiyado magas, and it would seem that they don't require a shvuah. So the Gemara goes back and forth on this issue until Rav Papa distinguishes between the two cases that we mentioned earlier, Shnayim Adukim B'Talis, and the case of Tfisei B'Karkashasa. Okay. Now, let's start the new sugya for today. Yosef is here, so we can start. Yeah, just kidding. Okay. You're on time, we were early. So we're out now on Daf Zayin Amud Beis. And we're about 2/3 down the daf. This is where we got up to yesterday. And we're up to Omer Abulazar. Now, before we start Omer Abulazar, let's just make sure we have the place. The first word of the line is Tsuvos. And again, I don't know exactly what other simonim. Oh, let's say parallel to Tosis de Isbe. If you drop down to about 5 lines down in that Tosis de Isbe, you'll see a line that starts with Ksuvos. Yeah, do you find such a line? It starts with Ksuvos?
Yeah.
Good. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Now, in order to appreciate Rabbi Elazar, let's just go over one more time. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that if you have Shnayim Adukim Bishtar, and the Malve is claiming that he dropped the shtar, the Lov is claiming that he dropped the shtar, is Rav Shimon Gamliel says Yachlok, the Lov will pay half of the Chov. Omer Abulazar, that which we saw in Rav Shimon Gamliel, that in the case of Shnayim Adukim B'shtar is Yachlok, that's B'shishneim Adukim B'tofes, or alternatively Shneim Adukim B'toref, then we say Yachlok. Aval echad aduk b'tofes v'echad aduk b'toref, then zenotel tofes v'zenotel toref. This is the sheet of Rabbi Elazar. In other words, Rabbi Elazar is saying that just like we said in the case of Shnayim Adukim b'talis, that each one gets whatever he's aduk, the part that he's got an achiz, he has a tfisa on, so too, if we apply that to the case of shtar, then if one person has an adikus, he's aduk b'tofes, and the other is aduk b'toref, then each one should get what he's aduk on. So basically, what Rabbi Elazar is doing is he's applying the universal principle of shnayim oksim b'talis, or called shnayim adukim b'talis, and he's applying it to the case of the shtar. He's not viewing the shtar as a separate entity unto itself. He's, in a sense, he's using the shtar as a piece of paper. Let's look at the shtar as a piece of paper. If two people, let's say, for example, this was a very valuable piece of paper. I don't know. It was produced, you know, with lead-free paper or something. You know, lead-free. So if the two of us, here, Yosef, I can use. So if the two of us are holding on to this, so it makes sense that we just split the piece of paper as a piece of paper. You know, you'll get half the paper and sell it on the market, I'll get the other half. But that doesn't make sense, l'chora, in the case of a shtar. Because in the case of a shtar, what really we're holding on to, what we're fighting on, is not the value of the paper in the market, you know, maybe a nice, you know, acid-free paper that's worth a couple of shekels, but that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the shtar and its value. It's if we could call it a chetzal raya, it's a proof. It's a proof in the hands of the Malva that's very powerful. He'll collect 1,000. And it's a proof in the hands of the Lova as a shomar, as if he paid up his chov. But Rabbi Eliezer,
grabbing it with the intention of Torah and
Correct.
You're driving a piece of paper stam, just like you did. I don't understand this svara.
Oh, no. We're talking about a malva and a lova here, right?
I understand.
So the malva...
You have to say they dafka chose which side they want to go.
Well, no, not necessarily. Again, the malva dropped the shtar. Now the malva is going to be out a thousand. Why? Because the lova is saying, I paid you up.
Right.
So when the malva grabs onto the shtar, he's really holding onto the $1,000 in the loan that's written in the shtar. He's not just interested in the piece of paper, the shtar. The lova, on the other hand, is claiming, I already paid you, I got back the shtar, and then I dropped the shtar, and then you grabbed the shtar. So what the lover wants to do is he wants to exempt himself from $1,000 of payment.
I understand.
So it's a very strange thing that we're going to look at this piece of paper and we're going to say, well, let's split the paper in half as if it was a piece of paper. And how does that make any sense? And in fact, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Li olam cholkim. Rabbi Yochanan says that even in the case where the malva is holding on to the top half of the shtar and the lova to the bottom half of the shtar, the malva has the toref and the lova has the tofes, it's irrelevant. They're both claiming the loan of the shtar. They're fighting over the rayas shtar, the mavan shtar, and therefore we should always apply the principle of yachlokim. So I'm just pointing out that on a, shall I call it, an intuitive basis, I would question the shita of Rabbi Elazar. Why is he viewing the shtar as a piece of paper? Like I said before, that this is very expensive paper. You know, we're fighting over a piece of stationery, and let's just simply divide it up. So I have here a note in the Masifta, and in Nomer Chav Beis, he says, Bishtar yeshnei chalokim. There are two parts to a shtar. There's the top part of the shtar that's on top, and that's where they write the names of the malva and the lova. They write the minyan amos, how much money is being transferred, is being loaned, and there's the nusach hashtar itself. Then we add the zman. It's very critical to understand that the toref, which is on the top half of the shtar, has the zman in it. And that's going to have a tremendous repercussion in Allah. Then we get to the tofes. That's the bottom half of the shtar. Now, what's the tofes hashtar? The tofes hashtar is basically a repetition of what we saw in the toref, but to the exclusion of the zman. What does the tofes have in it that the toref does not have in it? Chasimas ha'edim b'sof hashtar. So again, as we indicated before, I'm just reiterating what we said, the advantage of the Torah on top is that it has the Zman. The disadvantage of the Torah is it doesn't have the Chasima Sa'idim. The advantage of the Tofes is that it has the Chasima Sa'idim, but it doesn't have the Zman. Now, at this point, if we want to ask Rabbi Elazar the following question, okay, the Malva, let's say, is holding on to the Torah, and the Lova is holding on to the Tofes, so what does that mean? How does that translate into dollars and cents? So are we going to sell the shtar and figure out what's the toref worth and what's the tofes worth? How are we going to divide this up? Okay, so the Gemara now goes on and clarifies the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says yachloku. Just like we had yachloku in the case of shnayim adukim b'shtar, we have yachloku in the case of shnayim adukim b'talus. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan holds afilu echad aduk b'tofes v'echad aduk b'toref. We still apply the principle of yachloku. It doesn't matter which part of the shtar, the top or the bottom, is the malva is holding on to, the lova is holding on to. It's irrelevant. And therefore, the lova is going to pay up half of the chov, which is exactly what we saw in the case of shnayim adukim v'shtar, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Because again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was not talking about Tofes and Toref. So the Gemara asks the following question. Vasanya, what are we going to do with the brisa of Shnayim Oksim Vitalis? In the case of Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, we had a brisa back on Av Zion. Zenotel Admokom Sheyodo Magas. Vezenotel Admokom Sheyodo Magas. In other words, we're not going to look at the Talis as a, shall we say, a single indivisible entity, but rather we're going to look at each part and parcel of the talus. And if Reuven's holding on to this much of the talus, that's what he's going to get, then Shimon's going to get what he's holding on to. Why are you insisting, Rabbi Yochanan, that we're going to always apply the principle of Yachloku with the shtar, and we're going to divide it up into half? How is that different than the case of Shnayim Oksa Vitalis, where one person gets the amount that his Yodo Magas and the other than his?
It's not worth anything.
Oh, excellent. So the Gemara answers, Lo Tzricha Dekoi Torif Be Mitzei. Rabbi Yochanan agrees that it really depends upon what you're holding on to. Are you holding on to the Toref, or are you holding on to the Tofes? If you're holding on to the Toref, we're going to give you the Toref. If you're holding on to the Tofes, we're going to give you the Tofes. So what's the case of Yachloku according to Rabbi Yochanan, where no one is holding on to neither the Toref or the Tofes? It's both in the middle. So they're grabbing it from the sides, like right from the Rochav, instead of from the Orech. So he says the following, Hochi Maila Meimra. So if that be the case, if neither of them is holding on to neither the Toref or the Tofes, then obviously we're going to apply the principle of Yachloku. That's already a principle that was embodied in the previous price that we saw of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Lo Tzricha. What's the Chiddush here? The Mekarev L'Gabei Chad. That the Toref Hashtar, which is, we're assuming now that the Toref Hashtar is more important and more valuable than the Tofes Hashtar, again we're going to get into that as we go along, is a little bit closer to the to Reuven, who's holding on to the top part of the Shtar, or the side of the Shtar that's closer to the Toref. Ismael does say, I might think, Amar Le, Reuven has a right to say to Shimon, let's not split it down the middle, let's split it in the down the middle, meaning from north to south, let's split it from west to east, down the Rochav. And my tfisa on this shtar is closer to the Toref than yours is. So then the Toref is going to fall on my half of the tfisa. Kamash Malan, no. The Omar Le, that the one who is a little bit further away from the Toref has a right to claim, my chaz is the palgas hachi, plug hachi. Why do you want to split it down the width? Let's split it in the length. And in the length, you and I are both equidistant from the Toref. So now the Gemara is basically applying the principle of Musheves. Let's go back to the principle of Musheves, just to review that.
There's something of value in there.
Correct. Omar Rava, this is on the bottom of Zion Omen Aleph, Im Haisa Talis Musheves, if there's gold that is sewn into the talis, the fabric of the talis, is Cholkim. Each one, Reuben and Shimon, who are holding on to the talis, will get equal shares in the Zah. So Gemara says, what's the Chiddush? Lo tzricha de mekarev l'gavichat, the same Gemara that we have now, that the Zav is located a little bit closer to one of them's tfisa, and he's going to say, let's split it in the Rochav, so that the Zav will be in my half. Mal detame the omalei plog hachi, kamash malon, the omalei, my chazis, the palgas hachi, plog hachi. Why do we split it down the width? Let's split it down the length, and therefore we're going to split the Zav, the gold part, equally between the two tofsin.
But then, in that case, we're no longer looking at a talus. We're looking primarily at the zahav. So here, why don't we look at the halva instead of the shtar?
So wait one second, Yosef. I think you're a step ahead of me. Your question about why don't we look at the shtar as a halva is an excellent question.
But
let's get back to the case of zahav. Because okay. I wanted to add one important point here. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, right, who wrote the Kovetshi Urim, asks the following question. What's the kamashmal? The kamashmal is that we split the talis in the length in such a way that each one gets equal share in the gold. Why is that so? Why doesn't he have the right to say that where my yad is, where my tfisa is, I have a closer relationship to the zav, and let's split it in that way? What is the nature of the kamashmal? What is the underlying rule that the Gemara is establishing based on Rava's statement? So he says the following. Mikan muchach, what we have to learn and derive from this Gemara, is kol echad muchzak bekula. We don't say that each one is muchzak bechetzia, and therefore let him get that chetzia. She'imu muchzak rak bechetzia, Hainu achetzi asamach li yodo. He should only get the chetzi that's closer to his hand. Uvadayim kein lo yikabel sazov hanimtza krova lechetzi shal ha'acher. In other words, the logic of the Maal D'Teim is such that if we look at each person as a muhsak on his half that he's holding on to, then the truth is in the mouth, in the claim of that person who has makariv leitfei, that where the zov is closer to him, because that's the chetzi that he wants to get. No. Says Rabbi Chanan, the chiddush here is that the muhsakis is not a muhsakis chetzi a chetzi, that you have muhsakis on half and I on the other half, but rather the muhsakis is on one entity, which is indivisible, and that is the talis. When I say indivisible, I don't mean it's not divisible, but I mean to say it's one entity, and we don't break up the muhsakis into different parts and say, well, you have a segmental muhsakis on your half and I on my half, but rather we view the talis as an entity, and each one has a chazak on the talis.
I have to say that.
Oh, so that's Rabbi Chanan. So let's see if we can apply the logic of Rabbi Chanan here in our sugya. Maal D'Teim, the Gemara wants to say that if the Toref Ashtar, which is worth more, it's like the Zov in the previous case, is closer to Reuven, Reuven would say, well, let's divide it down the middle. And the answer is no. If we do, and again, let me just add, which is obvious, that if we divide it down the middle with the width, then Reuven ends up holding on to the Tofes. The Gemara says no. Kamash Malon, that Omalei, that Shimon has the right to say, to counter to Reuven, my chazis the palgas hachi, plog hachi. Instead of dividing it in the width, we're going to divide it in the length, and each one is going to get half the Torah, which means half the Alva. So here, Yosef, I want to plug in your question. Why do we view the shtar as a piece of paper? Let's view the shtar as a shtaraya representing the chol. And I think that's exactly what the Gemara is answering. That just like Rabbi Chanan said that the tfisa and the chumukzakis is on the entire talis, even though one person's holding on to half the talis, the other half, but we view them as if they're all, both of them are mukzakim on the entire thing, I think the Gemara is applying the same logic to the case of a shtar. And it's almost the kavachom. If you say it in the case of a talis, how much more so should that logic apply to the shtar?
And therefore, actually has value in and of itself, forgetting about the zahav.
Correct. The talis is what we call gufo mamon, so we can split its value, and we can say each one is muksuk on the entire talis. Let's do yachloku. But in the case of the shtar, how much more so should we say that we're not holding on to the paper? The question is, did the malva drop the shtar, and therefore the lova has not paid up the shtar, or should we assume that the lova dropped the shtar and he already paid up the chol? So therefore we're going to say yachloku, and the chiddush is that we don't look at this shtar as a piece of paper, but rather we look at it as a, as we call it, a cheftzah shel shtar raya. Amalei Rav Acha midifti l'Ravina. Let's go back to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer made a strange comment here. His view was that im echad adik betofes vi echad adik betoref ze notel tofes. So the Gemara at this point understands that what we're doing is we're taking the shtar, we view it now as a piece of paper, as we said before, right? That was my mashal over here. And we're going to divide it up based on who's holding what.
So that's connected with an Al-Khana.
Right. So, but the Gemara asks it in a very sharp way. Listen to the Gemara's cash. The Gemara says, is lovely. What are you going to do with half the shtar? Right? We're going to cut the shtar in half, and you end up with half the shtar. So let's say, for example, Reuven is going to get the Toref, right? Because we're applying the principle of Zenotel Achiyod Magas, and Reuven is holding on to the Toref. Well, the Toref has no signatures on it. It's a chatzi shtar. It's really worthless. Lovely. What is he going to gain here? We're going to give the malva, let's say, I'm just throwing out a possibility, we're going to give the malva half the shtar, which is called the Torah Fashtar. V'chilotzer al pitzli chuso hotzara. This is one of the most famous mishalim in the Gemara. He needs it as a piece of paper to cover up. We used to call it in my youth a bottle cap. He needs it as a bottle cap. In other words, you're going to cut the shtar now in half, correct? What value does the shtar have when you cut it in half? The story of the shtar is in the Toref, but the signature of the shtar is in the Tofes. So Shkarf, you gave me the Toref. What am I going to do with the Toref? You split it in half. The Gemara thinks you mamish cut it down the middle with a knife, with a scissors. So I'm going to use it. Lotza, please, I need it as a cap for my tzlufis. The Rashash here has a kasha. All right, I don't know. He says the following, that the Gemara in Baba Basra actually asks a question like this in a similar context, and the Gemara says, "Nafkamita lotzer al pitz nichuso." This Gemara is really rephrasing the Gemara there. So he says that Gemara is talking about an object, and the Gemara wants to know what do you do with half of the object. But here, Agamara is talking about a shtar that's going to be worthless if you cut it down the middle.
How did they hold on to? Let's say let's go back to the talus for a second. How did they hold on to the talus? You hold on to the whole half of the thing?
So the Gemara goes back and forth. You were in Chutzot, so we discussed this. There's something called Shnayim Oksim Vitalis and Shnayim Adukim Vitalis. So Oksim Vitalis, the Gemara identifies as Karkashta, which means that each one is holding on to the fringes of the talus.
Okay, but we're doing
and Adukim means each one's holding on to the goof, the physical part of the talus.
But that's
and it can be nafkamina between
still,
the two.
But they're still talking about a limited portion of the entire talus. So what we're doing is, theoretically, you're saying by holding a certain amount, we conceptually, since there are only two people involved, saying they're each holding a half. But they're not holding a half, they're holding a little corner. That's all they have is a corner
right.
in their hand.
That's the paradox. That in the case of Karkashta, we hold that they're both holding on to the entire talus.
Yeah.
That's the way the halacha is. Good, I'm sorry.
Their claim is the entire talus.
Yeah, but you can claim what you want. I mean, it's like claiming
Berea. What's the mechzakas of it?
Yeah.
If the claim is the whole thing, what difference does it make of how much you're mousing?
Well, it does.
I claim it's mine, he claims it's his, he's grabbed more and I've grabbed less. Should it make a difference? Questioning the whole Gemara.
That's correct. It's correct, but it's based upon the assumption that if you're grabbing anything, you have a shaykhus to this baggage.
To what part of the beggar? Okay. Just the part that you're holding?
That's the point.
That doesn't make
that's
sense.
That's the point. That's why it becomes difficult to talk about, you're talking about the first part of the star, the second part of the star. You're not holding the whole first part of the star crumpled in your hand. You're holding a piece
that's
of paper.
That's why Rabbeleza is very difficult. You're going to make sense.
Yeah.
Well, now the Gemara is going to try to reinterpret Rabbeleza, right? So we're not taking a scissors, says the Gemara, and splitting the star in half. We're not dealing with lots of alpitzlichus. Amalei, so this is Ravina's response to Rav Acha. This is not what Rav Eloza had in mind, that we should cut the shtar into two. But rather, Lidami, what we're going to do is, we're going to try to evaluate if someone wants to buy the shtar. Now keep in mind, if you want to know what a shtar is worth on a market, so for that you have to learn Masechta, you won't believe this, Makis. Anybody know which Mishnah and Makis I have in mind? It's the Mishnah of Hazama in a case where the two Edim testified on a shtar and then they were Muzam on that testimony. So the Gemara wants to know, the Mishnah actually addresses this question, how much do the Edim have to pay? Because they testified that the shtar, let's say, was possible. Again, you have to go through. So the Gemara says, let's sell the shtar on the open market. So Gemara says that when you sell a shtar on the open market, the value of the shtar on the market is not equal to the face value of the shtar, if you follow what I mean. So the shtar might say that Reuven owes Shimon 1,000, no one's going to buy the shtar at 1,000. So how much are they going to pay for the shtar? Less than 1,000. Now, if they're going to pay less than 1,000, we're going to have to add the following variables. Variable number one is that if it's a shtar she'ena mekuyam, the buyer is going to have to find two edim to be mekayim the shtar, or at least locate the two edim who are signed on the shtar. That again adds an if into the value of the shtar. Number two, we have to add the following possibility, that the owner of the shtar may have already received payment, or he may admit that he got paid, even though he didn't take back the shtar. Number three, there's a possibility that the owner of the shtar may have died and the yorshim might not be able to collect. This is very relevant to the case of a ksuba, because if she dies before him, then the ksuba is valueless. So the Gemara over there in Makkos, you know, weighs all the possibilities. Let's say a ksuba is worth full value is 200 zuz. How much is the buyer going to pay? First of all, he can't collect it immediately, so he doesn't have cash in hand. Secondly, it's very iffy, because if she dies first, he can't collect the ksuba. And thirdly, if let's say he claims parati, that already paid you the ksuba, so in certain cases he might be believed. So there's so many different variables, and the Gemara eventually reduces the value of the ksuba on the market by more than 50%. You're going to pay less than 50%. In any event, getting back to our Gemara, the Gemara says lidami. Now, what is the value of this shtar lidami? In other words, let's evaluate the shtar in terms of, number one, the toref, and number two, in terms of the tofes. Is someone willing to pay more for a shtar that has a toref, than he would if he would buy the tofes? Again, if we said before that the advantage of the toref is it has what? No, the toref on top has zman, right? It has the zman. So what is that zman worth? How much does that jack up the value of the shtar? So again, it's almost as if the following. We have two buyers over here. One buyer wants to buy a shtar with a toref, and the other buyer is going to pay for a shtar without a toref with a tofes. Okay then? So the Gemara says that the person who's buying a shtar with a toref is going to pay more for the shtar. Why is that? The Omar Hachi. Because here's these words going to say, Shtara de ispe zman kamashavi, udeles be zman kamashavi. Let's compare two shtaras. Let's say the value, the face value of the shtar is equivalent, but one shtar has the zman and the other does not.
But both those shtaras have signatures.
Correct. And both the shtaras have signatures, but one is missing the zman. The shtara de ispe zman govi mi mishabde. But the idach, the shtar that doesn't have his zman, lo gavi mi mishabde. So let's try to understand. Any time that you have a shtar against someone, for example, the malveh has a shtar against the loveh, then the advantage of the shtar is twofold. Number one, it means that he has a power of raya, which means that the loveh cannot deny that he took the loan, because otherwise why is the malveh holding on to the shtar? But number two, the other advantage of the shtar is that the shtar facilitates gviya mi mishabde. In other words, in a milva bal peh, if there's an oral halva, then the love, if he defaults on the payment, the malva is out in the cold, out in the rain. Although now I saw the sun came out, right? So the malva cannot collect for any money from the mishubadim. Masha enkein, in a case of a milva shtar. Again, we're going to have to prove that it's only if there's a zman in the shtar. Then the malva can collect from mishabde, which means that if the lova subsequent to the alva sold karka, because mishabde is always going to be karka, that's called nechas b'sheish lemachrayus, then the malva has recourse to collect the chov in the case where the lova defaults on the payment from the mishubadim. So the Gemara now establishes by medvar amurim, the precondition is that there has to be a zman in the shtar. Why? Because we have to warn the buyers that they're buying a piece of karka from leaned karka, right? That something has a shibud on it, meaning that they are taking a risk that maybe they'll have to fork over this karka in an event that the lova doesn't pay. So the lova is the mocher, and the lokeh who's buying this piece of karka knows that he's a lova. How does he know he's a lover? Because of the shtar. The shtar has what's called a kol, and it's public knowledge, and therefore he knows that there is a shibud. But now, when was that shibud chal? Here, the burden of the proof is going to be on the shoulders of the malva. What do I mean? The malva cannot come to the lokech and say, well, why did you buy this karka? Obviously, you knew that there was a lien on the karka, and therefore you have to fork over the karka. No, no, no. What are you talking about, says the lokeh. I bought this field before the lova actually took the loan. So now we don't know exactly when was the date of the loan. Now the Malv is in deep trouble over here. Why? Because even if, let's say, he could prove with Edim that the loan took place at a certain date, which preempts the Mechira, the sale of the karka, but nevertheless that's a Milva Balpeh, that's not a Milva Bishtar. Meaning that Edim could testify when the Halvah took place, but that testimony is extraneous to the Shtar itself. The lokeach, the buyer, is only held responsible for shibud, for buying something with a shibud, to the extent to which it's written in the shtar. You can't hold him responsible for that information that was left out of the shtar. So let me read to you two lines here in a footnote in the Masifta. He says something very important. He says, Klomar, the etzem halva, as far as the milv is concerned, what difference it make whether there's a zman in the shtar? Shavim, it's equal. You know, the malv and the lova, whatever the sum total of the alvo was, doesn't change with or without the shtar. However, the zman of the shtar is critical to upgrade the value of the shtar. Why? Because the oches es hatoref, if he's holding on to the toref which has the zman, then the shtar is upgraded to a higher value because it now is collectible from mishubadim. If I want to buy a shtar, I want to cut down the variables that might jeopardize my ability to collect that shtar, and one of the variables is my ability to have the security to be able to collect it from the lekuchos. So here he quotes the Yushalmi. But let's see if we can make sense out of this Yushalmi. He says the following: Adifus haTorif al haTofes, the superior, let's say, value of the Torif over the Tofes, who rak bazesh yesh lo zman, shalok haTofes, which doesn't have his zman. Shemilvado yeshgam batofes is called prote halva, with the exception of the zman, which is omitted from the tofes. Every other detail is repeated in the tofes. Mishum shetzorech lachzar aleim is referring to the pirte halva, how much money and who's malven, who's lova. All this is repeated bishura hachrona shel hashtar. Right, this is the Yiddish phrase, the Utish Shura, right? The bottom of the shtar has to repeat all the details of the shtar except for one. And that's the zman. He says that this is very fascinating. Im yesh stira b'shtar, sometimes you'll find a contradiction between the top part of the shtar, the top of the shtar, and the bottom part of the shtar. And again, I would have assumed that it's the Toref Hashtar that's more important. No. He says, Shura Achrona Hi Ha'ikar. That's the main part of the shtar, the repeat of the shtar on the bottom. It's kind of like if you've seen Iksuba, they write, Delokas Machta, Udeloke Tosei Vishtara, you know, that Man Koman Deshar V'Kayam, you know, that's in the Shura Achrona of the shtar.
He says, to the Eidim.
And it's closest to the Edom, and the Edom are siding on that part of the shtar. And he says the following. He says, Afal gavdi ein Edom b'toref hashtar, elo b'sof tofes hashtar. He says, v'imkeno yomokom lomar, we could have considered the possibility, she'ikos shal shtar wa tofes, mikomokom, kevan shemoda halove. This is fascinating. In other words, we never ask the question, how do you sell a shtar that has a toref in it? Even in a theoretical world, let's say, you know, conceptually, if the malva is holding on to the toref and he wants to sell the shtar, who's going to buy the shtar? I mean, the shtar doesn't tell you exactly where the shtar doesn't contain within it, I mean the Torah for shtar, the testimony of the shtar, right? What makes a shtar into a shtar? Right? Why do we spend endless amount of time, Masechta Gittin, Masechta Kiddushin, the Bavos, all that shtaros, right? Shtaros, what's in a shtar? The answer is the Chasimus Eidim. So what is the Torah worth if it doesn't have Chasimus Eidim? So based on various sources, he comes to an amazing conclusion that the reason why the Torah Fashtar is valuable even in the absence of Chasimas Ha'edim is based on the fact that the Lova is claiming Parati. What does that mean that the Lova is claiming Parati? The Lova is saying that I paid up this Shtar. Just 1 second, I lost my place here. By the way, technically, this is not a major point, but who actually writes a shtar halva?
The
Lova actually writes it. That's the Mishnah at the end of Bava Basra, that kosvin shtar lelova afal pichein malva imo. And the Edom will give the shtar over to the Lova, and the Lova will decide if he needs the money. And when he decides to need the money, and the Malva says, I want a shtar, then he produces the shtar. So the Lova, the very moment he admits that he did take the money, again he's claiming he paid it back, but he admits that he took the money, is keva de moda hal alva, once he's moda on alva itself, shekosev es hashtar, ein tzarech v'edim. Why? Because hodas bal din kemei edim domi. And he's admitting that he wrote the shtar. And he says the following. He says, therefore, moda v'shtar sheksovo, is ein tzarech lekaimo. Again, that's the sheet of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel that we discussed last week, that once the Lova claims that he paid back the shtar, the Malva will get half the shtar, even though he has no kiyum on the shtar. Normally, there's no way that a Malva could collect a shtar if the Lova says parati, if there's no kiyum on the shtar. But here, since the Lova is admitting that he wrote the shtar, then you don't need kiyum on the shtar. The whole purpose of kiyum on the shtar is to authenticate the shtar that it wasn't a forgery, but the Lova himself admits that the shtar was written. He says, therefore, even the machzikas hatoref, in this case where the Lova admits that he took the alva, he's just claiming that he paid it back, is modem shtar sheksovo ein tzarech lekaimo, and therefore we don't need chasimas ha'edim. But he has the advantage of having a shtar with his man. So that's one approach to the sugya. Then he says that there's this long Tosus here, the Is, in which Tosus disagrees with Rashi for a number of reasons. First of all, he says that the fact that the shtar in the toface has a repetition of the facts in the Shura Achrona, ein zem moil l'shum davar. That's not going to be meaningful. All right, that part of the Tosfos maybe we'll leave for another day. Let's just see if the next 5 minutes we can just complete at least the Gemara in this sugya, and then tomorrow Blinetta will try to expand upon it. So the Gemara says the following. We've been talking about a case until now in which Rabbi Elazar has the Malve, or Ruvein we'll call him, being Tofes, the top part of the Shtar, the Toref, and Shimon, the bottom part of the Shtar. What happens in a case where they're holding on to the Shtar Shoveh B'Shoveh, let's say from the sides, but they're both equally Muchzak on the shtar? So the Gemara says, in that case, even Rabbi Elazar agrees, Yachloku, we're going to apply the same principle that we apply to a talis, to the shtar. So the Gemara says, Yachloku nami da moron. What do we mean by Yachloku? Do we mean that we cut the shtar in half? Right, we never really discussed this, you know, back in the first mission in the Masechta, it says Yachloku, what do we do? What do we do in the case of a shtar? We had many cases of shnayim oksa v'shtar. We said yachloku applies. What does that mean? So he says lidami, that we're going to sell the shtar on the market and split its value. How does he know such a thing? Dilo tema hachi. If you're not going to agree that yachloku means that we sell the shtar, but rather yachloku means that we split the shtar in half and we cut it with the scissors, ishnayim oksan vitalis then what you should say is that whenever it says yachloku, it means we take a scissor, we cut it. It's hachinami de palgi. Are we going to take the talus where it says again yachloku? I'm going to take a scissors and cut the talus in half. I mean, that's not such a bad idea. Where it says no, that's a terrible idea. Why? Ha afsidu ha, because half of the talus is not worth half of the value of the talus. When you cut the talus in half, again, it may be worth as a piece of cloth, you know, that you can stitch up and attach more cloth to it. But as is, half of a talus is not half of a talus. Right? Half a talus is not 50% of the value of the talus. And therefore, the Gemara assumes that what we're saying here in terms of a shtar, that if two people are holding on to the shtar, then we're going to split it by selling it on the market and split its value, that really is nothing more than an application of the principle of Yachloku in its original formulation, namely back in the case of talus. And the Gemara rejects it. The Gemara says you can't prove anything from dividing the talus, which means that we divide the value of the talus on the market, because it is possible to say that under certain circumstances, at least, we would split the talus in half. Holo kasha, and here we're going on to Daf Ches Amud Aleph, dechazya. What does it mean, dechazya? In other words, half of the talus is not half of a talus. It may be, well, it depends which way you want to say it, but I mean, half of the talus is a talus, so to speak. Even half of the talus is a talus. What are you going to do with half of a talus? So Gemara says, chazya liktanim. Right? It's good for children's garments, right? What's the name of that famous company that sells children's garments? I forget it. Anyway, so the chazya liktanim, that a katan could take half a talus and he could use it for ituf, you know, to cover his body. So now the Gemara comes back to Rava, and this is where we'll wrap it up for today. V'hadi amar Rava shemaisa talus musheves cholkim hachinami depalgile. What are you going to do? Right, Rava was saying that even though Reuven is a little bit closer in his tfisa to the zav, to the gold pot, nevertheless we're going to split the zav as well. Hachinami depalgile. What are you going to do? You're going to take a talus that has a gold embroidery into it, and you're going to cut it in half with the scissors? I mean, bishleib, in the case of a cloth, you can do so, and half the talus is worth something for children's wear, right? But what are you going to do in the case of zav? You can end up with a small piece of cloth, and it has gold in it. The child has to wrap himself up in a garment that has gold embroidered into it. Absolutely. Basically, you are undermining the value of this talus by cutting it in half. Holokasha dechazel ibnei malach, and that the princes, these young little princes, they want to walk around with a garment that has an embroidery of gold in it. So tomorrow, Bli Neder will go back to this very long footnote about the Yerushalmi that we started today. And let me just make a note. Does anybody have a pencil here by any chance? Just to... No, this one doesn't work, unfortunately. Oh, thanks. I'll give it right back. And we are up to... Actually, turn back to this page here. We're up to Tosfos. Okay, then. All right, Rabosa, I have a photocopy for you.